Hello and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast with myself, your host, Jordan. On this week's podcast, we are going to be having a bit of a special. We're going to be discussing racism in football. This week's show is dedicated to answering the question, are we close to seeing radical action from players? And if so, what does that look like? I'm aware we're reaching the climactic and exciting part of the season. Title race looks like it's going to go to the last game of the season. It's Champions League week. And it's also award season approaching too. But I think that in light of what's happened in the last 10 days in particular, I don't want to let football mask what's really a really important issue. I really want you guys out there listening to get involved and let us know your opinions and your suggestions about what we can do in this fight against racism in football. To do so on the pod, I'm joined this week by Akin, Neil and Tasha. How are we doing, guys?
Very well.
Everyone well?
Good. Yeah, that's right.
Good. We'll also be hearing very shortly from a current professional player and a few more guests down the line too. Raheem Sterling racially abused away at Chelsea. Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang abused with a banana thrown at him by a Spurs fan at the Emirates. Danny Rose, Callum Hudson-Odoi and Raheem Sterling racially abused on England duty away in Montenegro. René Hector in the women's game racially abused by a rival player, Sophie Jones. Moise Kean racially abused by Cagliari fans playing at Juventus. Wilfried Zaha racially abused on social media. Derby's Dwayne Holmes allegedly racially abused by a fan in the game of the weekend against Brentford. Wigan's Nathan Byrne racially abused on Twitter. And most of those have just happened in the last week. And the culmination of this led to Danny Rose, the Tottenham and England left-back, revealing last week that he's now counting down the days until he can exit the game due to the constant racist abuse. And just as frustrating, the lack of care and about the issue from the game's governors. With the likes of Sterling, Rose and Lukaku speaking out this season, it seems players are becoming impatient with the amount of talk, with the idea of taking action into their own hands being seemingly the only option left. Tasha, I'll start with you. Education's a word that often gets used in as a solution to try and, you know, rid the problem of racism within football. Is that still the answer, or do you feel now it's time we need to be looking at another way?
Education, I think, is the answer to a certain extent, but it is more to the extent of the rehabilitation process for those who are abusing others. You know, there is enough information out there, enough education, inverted commas, out there saying that it's not okay to be racist. We should all love each other. It's clearly not working. When I think of education, it's about those who are being charged with the racist abuse of somebody and hopefully re-educating them to show them why it's not acceptable in the sense that they will then pay that message or pass that message forward to their youngers, to their friends and their family. I mean, we don't need education for those of us that know racism ain't acceptable. We need education for those that don't know to tell their friends, hey, when you use the N-word about that player that is on our team, that's not cool. They're the people that need education, not, I would say, people that sat here right now.
Akin, can you see the FA and the Premier League moving on this now? Because it's been a season where there's been so many high-profile incidents of racism in football. If we take the Premier League just as an example, I know it's been happening at lower leagues, but is it getting to the point now where the FA and the Premier League are going to have to do something about this, or do you see nothing imminently at least being done?
Firstly, I'm bored of this. Mm-hmm. I've said to Jordan in private conversations that this whole racism thing, I'm bored of it. I'm not even interested in it. And the reason why I say that is because it's nothing new. We go through this every, 6 to 8 weeks or whatever.
Well, let me cut you. The reason why I've done the show this week is because I agree with you to a degree that I try to avoid just doing shows on racism when one incident pops up. But it just feels like all the incidents that happened within a week, it just felt like we're getting to a boiling point now. And the talk behind closed doors of players taking action, I felt relevant now to have that discussion once again.
Okay. Again, I'm still bored of it. The last time this happened, you said the same thing. I feel like this time there'll be a change. And I said, we'll be talking again. in 6 to 8 weeks. And lo and behold, we're talking again in 6 to 8 weeks.
No. I didn't say that. I said when Raheem Sterling made the post after being abused at Chelsea.
I said in the media.
There has been a change.
Hold on, guys.
It may not be what we would want.
I'm just clarifying. I said in the media there'd be a change. I didn't say that within the stadiums there'd be a change.
6 to 8 weeks,
yeah.
We're still here.
Yeah.
The point I'm making is I'm not even interested in what the FA and Premier League do to an extent. I'm more looking at, okay, we've gone through a process of where, let's say maybe the 70s and 80s, where black players were considered trailblazers and leaders for ignoring things and for, quote-unquote, rising above certain things and so on and so forth. That is no longer a solution to this problem. This problem now needs to be solved by players taking things into their own hands. It's not acceptable. If I go to work, I'm not accepting certain things from myself. The same goes for you. Everybody should be in that same way. You have a certain level of self-respect. Now, I'm not saying these guys that get racially abused don't have self-respect for trying to solve a problem by scoring a goal and saying that's to the haters or racists or whatever. That's one solution, because I think it's a multi-pronged thing that needs to take place. But I think it's time now for maybe players to sit down on the pitch and say, no one's playing football here for 90 minutes if I'm going to hear that. It's not acceptable for a person to go to work and experience that. Or if all the players, black, white, green, yellow, blue, walk off the pitch. Because racism in society, it's not just racism in football. It's not as if football is outside of society, it's within society.
Yeah, but
it's very
racism,
indicative of society.
And the whole society thing. Football.
So racism is not acceptable. And that's not just for black people or Asian people or those stuff. It's everybody. Everybody in society needs to look at something like this and say that is not acceptable.
All right.
So if your teammate, for example, is suffering racial abuse, whatever colour he is, whatever colour you are, you as a brother of that guy, your teammate, should be following him in his actions.
Okay. Neil, do you feel like football will get a handle of racism, or do you think racism will push football to the point where it gets something bad will happen and it will have to act and impose some proper sanctions on whoever's committing the offences?
I think the latter's more likely, to be honest with you. I think the latter seems more likely right now. I think that there's, as ever... We've got an absolute responsibility vacuum where football's concerned in this country. Everybody's quite happy to push the problem onto someone else. That's partially because the EFL, the Premier League and the FA are all separate things, and the government, firstly, has got enough to get on with at the minute, and secondly, doesn't want to know anyway at the best of times where football's concerned. Mm. And the current government has got absolutely little issue in racial issues and pushing an agenda there. So across the board, you're in a situation where It's really interesting when you said you were bored about it, because when you told me we were going to be talking about this and I was thinking about what I was going to say, I was going to say, God, I bet you Danny Rose is sick of it. Mm. How many interviews does Danny Rose have to give? How many times does Raheem Sterling have to talk about this? You know, how many? These are lads in their 20s who just want to play some football and have a nice time and knock around with the family and the mates.
Look at Hudson-Odoi, the greatest moment of his footballing career.
Yeah.
And his post-match interview was all about... Yeah. The abuse.
Yeah,
and he's 18.
Great first game, but he's a teenager. He's a child.
So I think you're in a situation where if there's a leadership vacuum, which there very clearly is, that's why, for instance, Raheem Sterling is left in a position where he's actually taking a lead on it and he's acting like a leader, and he shouldn't have to. He shouldn't have to. He's 25 years old and he should get to play football. And I think that's where. But this is why I don't see who steps up. I don't see where the voice comes from. Mm-hmm. I don't know who it is. I don't know who it is at the FA. I don't even. Is the FA got a chief executive at
they
the moment?
They don't. And we'll come to that in just a little bit. I've got to bring in Charlton Athletics. Lyle Taylor is on the line here. Lyle, how you doing, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
We're very good, man. We're very good. Cheers for coming on the pod, mate. So as a current professional footballer, Lyle, are there conversations happening in dressing rooms now about this problem? And if so, what is being said?
There are. With it happening to me, I think that's 3 or 4 times now in the last 6 weeks. It's become a talking point in the dressing room. And my teammates are... backing me. They're of the opinion that whatever action I deem right, they're happy to back me in doing that.
And if you on your next game, next whenever it may happen, were to hear or experience some racist abuse, what would be the action that you would take? At what point now do you think, if this happens to me, I'm going to do this?
Well, if it happens to me and I hear it from the stand, I'm walking off the pitch. I've said that now a few times in the last week in interviews done. I will be walking off the pitch, because I'm not gonna stand there and accept that you can abuse me as a fan, a paying fan of football, simply because I have a different colour skin to you. Right, I'm sorry, but we're in 2019 now, and this isn't the UK that we lived in, or the England we lived in back in the 70s and the 80s, where things like that were frowned upon but were almost socially acceptable.
And without telling us obviously the details of your contract at Charlton, just give us an insight into the kind of implications for a footballer walking off the pitch, because a lot of people say that, you know, action is needed, but walking off the pitch isn't the answer. You know, we know what the club or the nation, the team is playing, what implications are for them. They may lose points, they may get a fine. But for a professional footballer, what would be the repercussions of you walking off the pitch?
Well, I know for a fact that the governing body would fine me. And whatever the governing body decided to fine me, or if they decided to fine me, I'd make that public knowledge. Because the way I see it is, them, if that happened, they'd be more than happy to fine the victim for taking the appropriate course of action, but are not willing to go that little bit further and make sure that the perpetrators of the crime, which is what it is, it's a crime, are punished. So unless they're willing to do that, then I don't see why I should be willing to stay on the pitch unless I know I have their backing.
And you'd be prepared to take that fine, because you, the bigger picture is that you would be offended, hurt, and the abuse is, the money becomes irrelevant.
The money is completely irrelevant. I'm sorry, but I am of mixed Black Caribbean and white descent. So at the end of the day, just because I am effectively slightly more tanned than you, you think you can do and say what you want to me? No. I have to take ownership of what I am, who I am, and my own body, and I will walk off that pitch. I will suffer the fine, and I will make it known that I have been fined for my actions.
And how much difficult is it, Lyle, for players at the top end of the Premier League, your Pogbas, your Manes, your Sterlings, for them to take that course of action?
Oh, it'd be horrendous. But by the same token, they would be then the beacon, and they would be the yardstick by which we're all measured by, which wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing, because if they are doing it, then that gives us the comfort and the confidence to take that course of action as well.
Hi, Lyle, it's Natasha. I read your interview in the Evening Standard the other day, and, you know, I want to applaud you for being so honest and so forthright, because I do think it takes a certain amount of strength to admit that we are tired of this and experiencing this and having to deal with it and discuss it. But I wanted to ask you, how important is it that you have allies in your dressing room? So teammates that, you know, if you turn around and walk off the pitch, they're going to back you, in the same way that Kane said he would back Sterling if it happened on England duty, and Gareth Southgate said the same. Does that make, hopefully it won't happen and we won't have to be talking about you leaving the pitch, but does it make it easier knowing that you can make that decision with that support from your teammates?
Yeah, it makes it infinitely easier. But I mean, we're talking about what's right. So really and truly, as human beings, whether it's racial abuse, or let's say you are being abused because of a deformation of some sort, or a disability or something like that, if we can't back those on our team, then what are we even doing? How can you call that person a teammate? The Moise Keane, Bonucci, and the manager.
Yeah,
how, as a 19-year-old boy, is he supposed to walk into that dressing room the next day or 2 days later, look his captain in the eye or look his manager in the eye and go to work, when they
don't back him over racial abuse.
Mm.
Somebody abused him because of the colour, simply because of the colour of his skin. And his own captain and his own manager haven't backed him with everything they have. That's just a shambles. That is an absolute disgrace.
That's embarrassing. Just finally, Lyle, are you just as let down by the governors of the game as you are of the actual abuse itself? Because it's one thing to be racially abused, but then you expect that when a crime happens, there to be a punishment, there to be action, and there's been no action. Are you just as angry at the EFL, the Premier League, the FA, UEFA, FIFA, for not nipping this in the bud with adequate sanctions?
Well, yeah, because ultimately they're the ones who will meter out the punishment or make sure the punishment is metered out. But they're not doing it, or if they're not doing it, why are they not doing it? Is it because it's an old boys' club and they don't want anybody infiltrating that old boys' club, so they kind of keep their closed ranks on it? Is it because the people at the top of these organisations don't know what it is to be racially abused? I mean, we could sit here and we could talk all day about who's let who down. But at the end of the day, without action, it doesn't matter who's let who down. If we're going to act on it, then that's fine. Mm. We're going to try and put right what has been done wrong. But unless we're going to try and put right what has been done, then we might as well not even bother talking about it.
No, I hear you. Listen, thanks for coming on the pod, man. I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers, mate. Tasha, what other type of action besides... First of all, are you an advocate of walking off the pitch?
I wasn't for a long time, but I kind of feel like there's nowhere else for us to go now.
So you think it's the only thing to do
I really
now.
Feel like...
Why wasn't you?
Do you know what? Because I'm one of them people, I'm going to be bossy and I'm going to front up and I'm not going to let you affect what I'm capable of doing. But I feel we're at a point now, there's two options. There's a player emits his own punishment on a racist fan, or they walk off the pitch. That's what I feel like we're coming to. So between those two choices, I say walk off the pitch. Because I know if a player does a Cantona, if he gets racially abused, everyone's going to talk about the player kicking the fan, not about the fan being a racist, whatever bleep word you want to use.
As was the case with Cantona. Because he was being, it wasn't racial.
They made a comment about his mum. I'm worried because, I'm sorry, like, no one should go to work and have to deal with abuse. I don't care whether you clean streets, I don't care whether you clean toilets or whether you're Premier League footballer, you should be able to go to work and do your job with a certain level of respect. Obviously, if a Liverpool fan is watching Man United, he's going to give him jip, but it's not a joke and a laugh and about how Stevie G slipped. That's a joke. This is, it's just...
And that can,
I feel like I'm running out of words to talk about it.
Even something like that, that can be turned as if Steven Gerrard was still playing for Liverpool, there's ways of using that incident as abuse. But the difference being is, it's not a crime.
No.
Do you know what I mean? That's one thing abusing a player, there's another thing committing a crime. Neil, are there other alternatives in terms of actual action that you think we can implement now, or is walk off the pitch... Is that the only thing now? Are we talking about heavy points docked and get their house in order and their fan base in order? Are we talking about playing games and only the away game, only away fans can come to five of your next home games?
And that's not going to happen, Jordan.
No, I'm just asking, is this the only thing we can do now, walking off?
This is the last thing we can do, because if the governing bodies, any of them, had any kind of...
If they cared.
Sense? Mm. Yeah, if they cared about them, I wouldn't be sitting here saying, yes, I advocate a player walking off the pitch. Mm. The players are going to have to walk off the pitch because those that run football don't care.
They're not interested, they don't care.
They don't care. Mm. Ignorance is bliss.
Mm. Go on, Neil.
I don't think there's... I think that you've got... There is just the complete crisis of leadership in governing bodies. So the idea that there's any governing body that's able to put themselves above the parapet on this and on many other issues for that matter, but on this... You know, they're incapable of running themselves at the moment. So the idea that they can run the game or run the leagues, I think, is impossible. And so it does feel as though, and that's why I think it's interesting the number of players who are talking about it at the moment. And it's interesting that either the talking about it has ramped up or the number of incidents has ramped up. And I think the answer is both. Mm-hmm. I think both is the situation. Then I think you're looking at I think players are going to end up feeling as though they've got to take themselves off the pitch. Mm-hmm. Where I hope that doesn't happen is, and listen, it's not for me to say, it's very much not for me to say, but where I hope that doesn't happen is the Eastern European option, in that I think that what that would then be turned into is something that was a moralistic crusade for the British press and the British media, who have contributed in part to all of this over a long period of time, because it'd be much easier to demonise the foreigner and demonise the other and say, we back our lads and all of our lads are sound. I think that if that happens in that context, then that becomes, it just becomes a straightforward thing where it becomes that the nasty Moldovans or whoever are responsible, rather than the idea that this is something that is quite clearly happening in grounds right the way across Europe, and that includes this country. And I think that that's an important thing, and that's why I think that what we can't do is try to act as though we haven't got our own backyard to get in order. And to be fair to the two England lads who've spoken recently, Rose and Sterling, they've been crystal clear on that. It would have been very easy for all of them to have hidden behind it's the nasty foreigners, and they've very clearly not done that, up to including Sterling today, saying that the first
part
time
of
he
the
had
reason they don't do that is because they feel like foreigners in this country often. So, you know, for them to...
They probably feel a kinship...
Yeah, for want of a better description, not sorry to cut you, but that's why they're not going to be like, that's why they are going to stand up and say that English football, English media and the English public has a responsibility, because they see how the English media is treating, you know, Montenegro after the abuse. And they're looking at the paper and saying, well, that's how they treat us on pretty much a 6 out of week, 6 days of the week.
The media outlets.
So my question to you was going to be, you always bang on about the media shouldn't be doing more. And we're talking a little bit about representation of journalists and presenters and people that are control of programming of the kind of players, of the kind of programs we see on our TV screens. But what can the media do? We've mentioned the governing bodies don't care about us and they're failing in looking after their players. What can the media do to do their bit to ensure that? Is it about them holding the authorities to account better? Is there anything more they can do?
Again, so in any journey or war, whatever you want to call what we're going through, you need people or different strategies to achieve the same goal, right? Now, I'm not one of the people... I'll tell you what I'm not. I'm not one of the people that, let's have conversations... Let's see what the other side are thinking. Let's all work together. I'm not interested. I'm not interested in what the media are saying. I'm not interested in what the mainstream, whether inclusion and all that stuff. I'm not interested in that. As a black man myself, and looking at black footballers, we have the platform now. Go and build your own black PFA. There's nothing stopping you from doing that. Only work with journalists who are fair. If it turns out that only black journalists from black outlets are fair, only work with them. It sounds controversial. I mean no disrespect to anybody, but this is what it is now. Only work with those who are fair with you. If you're being unduly criticised for things outside of football and you have the feeling, because sometimes it's very hard to have the tangible evidence to say it's because of race, and that's how people get away with it.
The covert racism.
Yes. So, but if you have... the feeling and enough of the intuition to know this is based on race, which is what Raheem Sterling did, and provided what evidence he did have to kind of suggest it, and people saw it, then you know that they're not being fair with you, irrespective. Even now, you've seen it with Raheem Sterling the other way. We're all seeing positive stuff about him. He's now becoming a leader. He's growing. He's showing maturity now.
How do you know what he was showing before
if you never treated him fairly? It's not that he's becoming this person. Perhaps he always was this person. But because you couldn't look past your idea of a young black boy from wherever, you didn't even see the person. So my point is, again, we've gone through this for decades. We've tried to work with people, this, that and the other. That's all done. Perhaps there are some people that can still continue that on that level. Akin is not that guy. I'm the guy, let's build our own stuff now. There's power... economic empowerment is what is the only thing that will gain any kind of traction in this thing. You don't ask to be heard. You don't ask for these things. You've got to go and do it for yourself.
Okay.
And then come back to the table and say, okay, now we're ready to talk.
All right. Let me bring in another member of the media. He wasn't Croft here from BBC Sport. Hugh, how you doing, mate?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. She's coming on the pod again. Are the media doing all they can to put pressure on authorities, and how do we better hold them accountable?
Well, it's a tricky one.
There we go. It is a tricky one.
Straight in.
you know, one of the, I guess it's quite a British thing to look at, certainly our journalists and our media, as having the ability to put pressure on those who are accountable for virtually anything. I think we play a big part in terms of news and politics in putting pressure on the powers that be. And when it comes to sport, yeah, I mean, it's a good question. Do we do enough to put the pressure on? I guess, I, to be honest, I don't think so. The real question is, what are the things that the media can do to affect it? They write the stories. I understand the point about negative coverage of players. And, of course, they can do better on that. But in terms of putting pressure on the bodies that run football to make a change in terms of the racist abuse in grounds or sanctions against teams, or to make more of an effect than the players themselves can do at the moment, I'm not really sure. And in terms of public perception, I'm not really sure the media now have the legs to stand on to take the moral high ground on much. And that's a really sad situation. But as Raheem Sterling's pointed out, that's the perception of fans, I think, and players as well. Certainly BAME players. So yes, they can do more. The question is, what can they do that they haven't said or done in the past 20 years to highlight the issues and to at least underline that something needs to change without those bodies doing anything? They haven't seemed to do much. So what extra can be done? I don't know.
You mentioned the idea of journalists who don't work in the news and politics sector not feeling particularly empowered or experienced in this. I mean, that's a real problem, isn't it, really, that there's been no one holding these governing bodies to account on anything for a long, long, long period of time. So to suddenly sort of generate the language around it, you know, no one's been properly sort of trying to work out what the purpose of the FA is in terms of growing representation at all levels of the FA. That's not been a thing. That's not, you know, when was the last time that conversation was genuinely had in the public domain? So is that part of the problem, really? That no one, because no one's doing this and no one's done this, no one knows how to start doing it?
Yeah, well, I think some people have tried. The problem is, when you highlight an issue and you say, this is the problem, it doesn't necessarily mean that you've got the solution. And a lot of journalists have highlighted plenty of problems around the FA, Premier League, in terms of representation, diversity. You know, they've highlighted the way that certain issues have been dealt with, different incidents have been dealt with over the years, the lengths of bans for players, for example, the fines given to clubs. And ultimately, they're met with silence. Unfortunately, if you're working at a newspaper or a TV station or a radio station, you're not in the room to change the things that you're complaining about. And you can write as many stories as possible, but ultimately, the two things are so far removed. I think when it comes to news journalism and politics, the agenda is so 24/7, so wall-to-wall, front-page news. You know, the reality of the situation is people have elections to battle for in the long term and short term. So their public perception is something that they need to manage, not in the same way that a president of an FA or a chief executive of a Premier League needs to worry about. They've got a job, which they're not going to lose if it's the Premier League, unless they stop making money, or if it's the FA, really. Well, I don't know what they need to do to lose their jobs at the FA. So,
yeah.
I think that's the main difference. You know, the two things, the sports media and sports journalists, they can call for change, but they are so far removed from those stories having an effect.
I disagree
on the positions. Oh, well, fair enough. But I can't see how a sports journalist can get, you know, granted you can talk about FIFA and corruption and breaking laws, but if people aren't breaking laws, you can't. What can you say about the FA? They haven't been good enough in terms of their sanctions towards clubs. Cool. That's not losing anyone their jobs. They put out a press release saying they're working very hard, they'll be speaking to the clubs, they'll be speaking to the players, things will change going forward.
So
years pass, things don't change, you do the stories again, they say the same thing. There is very little you can do.
Again, I disagree.
So go on, Akin. So why do you disagree, Akin?
So I do appreciate what he's saying. They're not in certain rooms at certain times, etc. But when the English media want to drum up a campaign, for whatever reason, they utilise the power of the media to do so. The media is one of the most powerful tools of any. When they want to drum up a campaign of any kind, they do. And more often than not, they'll start swaying public opinion to follow what they want or their campaign, and then the governing bodies, etc., start following suit and start listening. So I think it's a bit of a cop-out to say, okay, they're not in certain rooms, they're not able to influence certain or make those decisions. Fair enough, they don't make the direct decisions, but oftentimes they influence directly or indirectly those that do. And when they want to use their power for whatever reason they do want to, they do. Again, it's just a case of, in my opinion, they just don't care enough.
The media, the governing bodies. So
as
when
well.
We're saying people aren't in the room for certain conversations, it's not necessarily a cop out. What I think, from a work perspective, I think where Hugh's coming from is, it's about the decision makers and those of us that want to create a positive change about this and be screaming from the rooftops all the time are unlikely to be the decision makers. The decision makers don't care, but it doesn't mean that everyone.
I never said everyone doesn't care.
No, but I'm saying when I say people don't have that power in a room, someone like me is way down the totem pole compared to a sports editor.
Yeah, but you're farther down than, say, let's say, I don't know. I don't know journalist names. I don't really care. No offense, guys.
We're not going to name anyone anyway.
But what I am saying is that there are those that can influence the powers that be.
Those that can influence, 9 times out of 10, this conversation we're having doesn't affect them.
Exactly.
There's only one mainstream journalist who I would say has been around since we started, which is Darren Lewis.
And he is doing his part.
Who is doing what he's doing. But the other people on that level, no disrespect to them, not saying they're bigots or they're racist, but it
just doesn't
not
on
affect
their radar.
Them on
it's,
a daily basis. In the same way that I can't write an article about bad disability access, I can empathise, but it doesn't affect me on a daily basis. So am I going to go to bat for that?
In any case, you're proving my point.
So hang on. Let me just bring in Hugh again. Hugh, I've got two quite difficult questions for you that I need you to try and answer as tightly as you can. The first one being, Akin mentioned earlier on about the black media, I suppose, or black members of the media cobbling together to form their own power, their own union, and utilising that power, that voice, to get out the message they feel that he feels we need to get out in connecting with the problem of racism on the pitch. Do you believe that there should be a black players' union? Do you believe that there should almost be a black media that stops looking for the mainstream to solve this problem and tries to work on a solution within itself?
I definitely think, in terms of professional footballers, there should be a group that represents the interests of black players. Absolutely, it's a case in American sport and American university sport as well. And I'm for being such a big part of the game at the top level, they definitely need their interests represented in a formal way. And need the ability to come together, communicate and work for change if that's what they want to do. So I definitely support that. Are you asking if the same should be the case for the journalists as well?
Yeah. We kind of have that with BCOMs to a degree. But do you think we need to have something a bit more professionalised? And do you think what more can we do as black members of the media on our own to try and make our voice heard a bit better?
It's really difficult because, of course, the idea of shunning all the main newspapers and doing your own stuff and putting your own stories out to put pressure on, that takes a lot of organisation, number one. It would require a lot of people to leave stable jobs. It would require a lot of people to invest money of their own to create something new.
And it ain't cheap.
I'm not even saying.
It's not cheap.
I'm not even saying. Sorry to cut you, but I'm not even necessarily saying that every black journalist or whatever should leave wherever they are. Say if you're a Paul Pogba, for example, says, I'm only going to work with Jordan Jarrett Bryan. from now on.
Yeah.
Whoever.
You can dream.
No, no, I see that team. Okay, no, right. Paul Pogba says he's only going to work with Jordan for what, you know, he's worked with Tasha and she was giving.
Yeah, think of your words. Thinking
you guys
carefully.
Anyway, he worked with Tasha. She was showing lack of professionalism by only painting a picture of him in a certain light, etc. So he's only going to work with Jordan from now on. Now, wherever Jordan works for, that corporation or so on, because he's now got Pogba as one of his clients, so to, I don't know what you guys call it, one of his clients, so to speak, you're surely going to get elevated wherever you are. So if you don't want to leave, I fully, like I said, there are many different ways to attack this. You can't just say one way is the way. If Jordan doesn't want to leave whoever he works for, but then he's got a good stable of current footballers under his belt, but surely you're going to be promoted.
But the players decide that. We don't decide that. Paul Pogba, he's got to say, "I'll do the BBC," but I'll only do it if.
He's got five different sponsors who all say you must do an interview with this person in your contract. You must do an interview.
Is it person or company?
Well, I said the sponsors.
So yeah, but the sponsor will say you've got to do the BBC.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't specify who at the BBC.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. That's the point I'm making. And anyway, I know that's not within the power of the
media.
There's
someone at the BBC that's whoever you're talking to.
Yeah, but that's just an example.
But we know there are.
Yeah, we know they are, but I'm saying, if we, sorry, Hugh, I didn't mean you, obviously. But what I'm
He's
saying
on the phone
if
right
we look,
now.
If we look, that's what I mean. That's what
I think we're getting, you know, we're getting lost with the example.
If you look at other organisations, there isn't, not in every organisation, is there someone there that the players can say, we can trust that person.
In any case, the point I'm making is the one I'm making. And it speaks to what you're saying. I just think I had to clear that up because I think you guys were... Perhaps saying, I'm saying every single black journalist
revolt,
leave, and then you know, maybe that is for a black publication to come up and grow from this. Yes, but I'm not saying Darren Lewis should leave the Mirror or this person should leave wherever they are. There are many different ways to tackle this.
Okay, and just finally, Hugh, do you think the media? Well, I know the answer to this question, but how much are the media failing in when they have discussions constantly about racism with all white panels? Is that a very simple? That's an open goal that they can change overnight to make sure when they're having these discussions and debates, they actually have people who have first-hand experience of what they're debating.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to Natasha's point about decision makers and editors. I think the reality is, and I can answer it very simply, not to coin a term that's probably been used too much elsewhere, but. I guess it's cheap to say it, but it's my opinion that it's just really lazy, to be honest. People basically say, whatever the topics are this week, we'll still use the same people we talk to every week about every subject to do with who scored the goal of the week or whatever. And when it comes to an issue about race in football, same guest, we'll just ask him about race. It doesn't really matter if he's white or black.
It does feel contrived, though. When
the
they
flip
pull out,
side of that
exactly.
is, though, my phone's been ringing off this week.
Yeah,
know?
It does feel contrived.
But I'd rather that than have what Sunday Supplement did on the weekend, where they had four white guys discussing racism in football.
Did they not bring Rodney back on again?
That's my point.
Is his time not ready? Because you know, I thought this was the only time they called him.
Go on,
it feels contrived when they just pull out a couple black faces for the racism time.
I hear that. I understand that. But we're at the point where the choice is someone's come on for that week to discuss the issue that's relevant to our community, or we get someone who's not in our community.
I mean,
that is the choice at the moment. So, you know, there are people who have experienced it, and some of them get regularly called. There are journalists that get regularly called. I understand, Natasha, that you know you will share the same frustration as many other journalists who are asked to appear when it's a story to do with race or gender, for example. But I would rather that personally than have someone who's not relevant discussing the issue.
That's true.
Who doesn't understand the issue.
Yeah, it's true. It's the lesser of two evils, I guess.
It's absolutely the lesser of two evils. And just to respond to the point about players, you know, making the decision to only speak to certain journalists, etc., etc. I mean, that would have to show an amazing level of understanding on their part to see which journalists are doing which work at which broadcasters and newspapers and publications. I can understand that lots of players do work, write their books with interviews with the same journos over the course of their careers regularly. But like Natasha says, they're not going to be in a position to reject certain broadcasters based on what's in their contract, based on what the sponsors want as well. I, the role of journalist is really difficult to define at the moment, because I think in particular when it comes to BME journalists and stories, there's a requirement. There's something that we're asking for in the BME community from journalism in general, but in particular from BME journalists, to make sure they do not miss carrying out, taking care of the stories that affect our community most. I think that may lead to those journalists not necessarily being pigeonholed, but, if that is your go-to topic, race, every single time there's a race story, and all of a sudden you get a back page story every time it's to do with race, I don't know how far that takes BME journalists in terms of the industry, if we're not then getting the opportunity to make sure that we're working on Olympic Games and World Cups, and that we're doing the other stories as well in terms of sports journalism that make back page stories. So I just feel like as a community, it's difficult to put that pressure and stress on those. We all mentioned Darren, for example. If Darren misses a trick when it comes to race stories, we're all going to be on the phone to him saying, Darren, why haven't you done this? There really just needs to be more journalists who are diverse in newsrooms to carry out all of these, to do all stories and make sure that people aren't being misrepresented in the way that Raheem Sterling was, or that the difference between the two young Manchester City players don't come out anymore. That takes us growing into the industry by encouraging others to come in and saying that you can do great work in this industry, you can change. I don't really care which publications or which newspapers, which radio stations people choose to work at, or whether they choose to do their own thing. But if there's more of us doing it, then we will get more diverse treatment of story.
I agree with you, Hugh. Listen, Hugh, cheers for coming on the pod, mate. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
See you later.
Cheers,
boss. Neil, another possible small win. Sorry, you had a question, didn't you? Sorry.
No, it was more of a sort of he sort of half covers it there, Hugh. But going back a few years, we interviewed Howard Gale to talk about race, and Howard just wants to talk about Liverpool. And this is that's the point he's making there. Which, so we got Howard in, and he comes to the Anfield Wrap, and we're trying to talk about a thing, and it never saw the light of day in the end. The thing we were trying to pull together for a ton of different reasons, but I think we did put out basically we'd start trying to talk to Howard about race, and he'd do a bit of it, and then he wants to talk about what the team he's watching at the minute that he's really excited about, and we'd chat along because he's an interesting fella, and we'd have a nice chat, and then we'd be anyway back to, and I remember we came out, me and the guy I was doing the interview with afterwards, and we said that was. So what I think we ended up doing was we ended up cutting together the bits of how we're talking about football and putting that out. But that's back to, it shouldn't be. And there's lots of areas where, God, the Anfield Wrap needs to look at itself. Everything needs to look at itself. But, it shouldn't be that we only really ring Howard when we want to talk about that.
Yeah.
We should ring Howard whenever we fancy just getting. I mean, we don't do very much stuff with ex-players, with any ex-players, but we should ring Howard. If we're going to ring an ex-player, why don't we ring Howard then? Yeah. And let's not talk about that. Let's basically say, so aren't Liverpool good at the minute?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is a big concern professionally of how I term it, the ism girl, sexism, racism, or whatever it is that week, and that. Especially, for example, footballers, when there's been abuse storylines with females, I've been called up. If there's racism, I'm called up. If there's sexism, I'm called up. Now, I also go to games and report on games and write stories and interview people. I don't
have things to say about football.
I don't want to just talk about the stuff that makes me depressed,
You're happy to do an interview to talk about Raheem Sterling being racially abused, as long as the next call after that is to talk about...
Yeah.
Arsenal
and
it is
a vicious circle, like Hugh's saying, because it is a vicious circle, because I want to hear voices where people are talking from personal experience about these subjects. So as much as it annoys me, I'm not saying people don't call me for work because I still want the work, but I feel I'm going to say yes because I'm concerned that the person they're going to use...
You feel it's your responsibility, maybe.
Yeah, I have a responsibility to be an example, especially as someone in the media, to not be... minimising these situations and being very vocal and strong about it. But we also need to respect the fact that people don't just want to talk about the negative stuff.
As a fan, I feel the same way. Sometimes I feel really stupid being a football fan. Mm-hmm. As a black man, the father of two, married. Sometimes I feel like, why are you still a fan of this thing that doesn't want you?
Mm. Yeah.
Do you understand? Sometimes you feel really stupid. Like, and that's why I really understood what Danny Rose was saying. At least he can kind of, it's work for him, so he can retire. Mm-hmm. I can't. At some point,
you can't break away from it.
Yeah, it's not that simple.
Yeah.
It's not that simple for a fan. But at the same time, what's more important, fandom or my self-respect? Mm-hmm. And it's coming to that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I fully understand. I fully get it.
Why do you think, you watch other sports, Akin, why do you think football in particular has this overt problem? I'm not going to say that other sports don't have racist supporters, but why do you think that football by far in this country seems to struggle with dealing with racism within the arena of where it's played in comparison to other sports?
I can't speak too much about how other sports deal with certain things because I don't follow them as much as I've followed football all my life. But what I will say is that football in this country especially is very tribal. Mm-hmm. So, for example, there was a Chelsea fan that was screaming, I can't remember, maybe Raheem Sterling, maybe? Screaming racial abuse.
Yeah.
And right next to him, I think, or two guys across from him was a black man.
Yeah.
That I don't know, it seems like, allegedly, the word of the day, I guess, from you guys earlier.
But, it's the word of our career.
he seemingly did nothing and claimed to not hear him later. But then at the same time, was that, in his moment of weakness, I'm not going to judge him. Him being a Chelsea fan
first,
exactly. And football is very tribal, so much so that some guys, for example, again, using Chelsea. I don't mean it's about Chelsea because this is a football problem. It's a society problem. Mm-hmm. But again, John Terry, when he was done X amount of years ago, you had Chelsea fans not fully calling him out on it. Because he's their captain, and
you
so
had Chelsea
on.
Fans popping champagne in the courtroom.
Well, wow. I didn't even know that.
But queuing up outside with banners celebrating the fact that he got off. I was there.
See, the point is the football colours come before the humanity, and with tribalism and the pack mentality that happens. Again, that is human, so maybe it is humanity, I guess.
Just on that, you know, going back, I come here because I do the Anfield Rap, and the Anfield Rap handled the Suarez Evra stuff badly because of the tribal thing and also because of Dalglish's involvement because...
And
Kenny is the extent to which he's like the father of the city, given everything that he did around Hillsborough, so it was really difficult for people to sort of... If Kenny says X, then X is the truth.
Yeah. And that's my point my point about being led by the media. Although he is a football figure, if the media did take a lead in certain things,
people would follow.
And we handled it. I mean, we were by you know a few months later, we were in better shape, and it's something we've reflected on since. But we were bad at that. You know, we were literally it was a mistake.
When you say bad in that, you backed Suarez.
Yeah, and not overtly, not crazily, but sort of tried to as much as possible sort of put that angle, and also just didn't take a breath. It's more the didn't take a breath part, and by the time it got round to the handshake incident, by that point we took a breath and we got some different voices in and we had a different frame of conversation. But in the immediate aftermath, we didn't take a breath. And genuinely, it's something I look back on. We were a very young company back then. We'd only been going about 3 months, 4 months when all that kicked off. But it was something that we really did not handle very well. And it's for precisely the reasons you're saying with where this is concerned. And this is not to in any way, shape, or form impugn Kenny either. You know, Kenny was a fellow in his 60s who I'm sure he was just doing his best and he didn't take a breath. But that was part of it which didn't help when you talk about the tribal thing. And that, you know, I remember that and remember, you know, and genuinely sort of reflect on that and reflect on how poorly we dealt with that. And I think that's the bit which I think football supporters have got to get better at. And then I think that the next part of that is being prepared to front it. And as the only white person in this conversation, I do think that ultimately, when you're all saying what's got to change, I think the thing that's got to change is
white men confront other white men. So that's the thing that's got to change.
So on that point, we've done the authorities, we've done the media. Let's bring it back to what the fans can do. And to do so, I want to bring in Billy the Bee, probably Brentford's most famous fan. How you doing, Billy?
Hey, not bad, man. How you doing?
I'm good, mate. I'm good. I mentioned earlier the incident that happened at Brentford in a game against Derby. Dwayne Holmes claims he was racially abused. Tell us what you saw and heard on Saturday.
Okay, I mean, I'm going to say, I mean, obviously Saturday, I mean, I stand in the eating row, which is the terrace behind the goal. And I have to admit, I didn't see anything. I didn't hear anything during the game. One of our friends who is in the new row, which is a side stand, he kind of messaged to us. He said, you know, Frank Lampard seems to be pointing. There's something seems to be going on. But there was no clarification. And I have to be honest with you, I actually only knew something was happening when I went back to the pub later. And we heard all the news had gone round. So from, you know, I mean, I run the main Besotted, or I co-run the main Brentford blog, Besotted. You know, we do podcasts, everything like that. So we normally get all the info. But this one, you know, kind of happened really quickly. There was another incident as well with some guy with a flag who turned up. So he was sort of kind of holding up to Frank Lampard, which had some sort of wording on it, which Frank Lampard also got very upset about. Now, obviously, the words have gone round afterwards as to what has happened, what hasn't happened. What I'll say is, and you know this as well, the guy's been, he's been arrested. He hasn't been charged. The file's been sent down to the CPS, and from what I can gather is in May, they're going to make a decision. You know, there's been a lot of, I heard you talking about fans rallying behind, so there's been fans rallying behind, you know, and there's been fans on the other side saying, you know, God, this is really terrible. But to be honest with you, we're in a situation where I don't know what's happened. I can't make a decision on what's happened here because I wasn't there.
You didn't see or hear it, yeah.
And most people, and also, you know, we're in a legal situation here. It's in the hands of the courts now. They're going to get all the statements, everything like that. But I think there's a bigger issue here for me. Okay, now, ironically, what's happened is that this has happened 2 days before Brentford launched a campaign. They've got this Be Positive campaign. They decided to launch this campaign, which was basically to promote racism and prejudice within football. Okay, so what they said is not promoting it, but they're basically trying to promote a campaign to stop it and to also try to get a more diverse fan base. This was on Thursday night. They had a forum which kicked it off. It had Marcus Gale, ex-player there. They had Anwar from Kick It Out. They had Thomas Frank, the Brentford head coach there. They had Romain Sawyers, who plays for St. Lucia, Brentford captain. He was there. It was a really, really good night, a really positive night. I turned up there as well. I was listening to the debate. As far as I'm concerned, I think that football has been really slow in the whole diversity thing, in actually kind of trying to diversify their fan base, in working together with black people, with Asian people. There's a million issues behind it. If you look at football, exactly what football's like, you look at the people that is employed by football, you know, football is, you know, you can't hide from it. It is a white male environment, okay? It's not diverse within itself. So it becomes very difficult for them to think diversely.
Sorry, Billy, to cut you there. What's the reporting process at Brentford like? How easy is it to report something you've seen and heard at Brentford? And is there a reluctance, probably, amongst a lot of supporters to report what they've seen and heard because maybe they feel nothing's going to be done?
I think the reporting process in general in football is a little bit cloudy. I think, and when I say that, is that okay, they say they've got the Kick It Out app. But if you look at the research, there's so little people that actually know about the Kick It Out or know how to use it. So not that people
think that. Know. I mean, that's yeah. everyone's agreeing with you here that they didn't know about it.
I know.
You know, so you've got that situation.
But you could just go to the police, man. No.
Yeah, but then they say they'll go to the police.
It's not a violent emergency, and it's they tell you to call. What is it, 101 or 111?
Then call them. Then
you know. So technically, what you're meant to do is that you're meant to go to the stewards. The stewards are meant to deal with it. Then there's a process. But I know for a fact, and I know this for a fact, that football, that process has not taken place. That people, I know this for a fact, have actually reported things, have reported incidents, and it has basically stonewalled. It hasn't gone anywhere. So what's happened is that people start to feel let down. I also know people that have reported things, and what's happened is it seems to have come out the back end, and then the people that they've reported have come down and end up threatening them. So what you've got a situation is that people start getting reluctant to report. They don't believe in the system, and the whole system breaks down. So what football needs to do is it needs to sort of win back the confidence of the fans to show them this is what we're doing to actually put your back. And this I think, is part of the process of what Brentford has been trying to do with this whole new diversity campaign that they started off. And the interesting thing is that Thomas Frank had this thing. I mean, I could tell you a story. When I first went to Brentford years ago, and I'm not being funny, but I used to get run down the street. I used to get beaten by my own supporters. There ain't no black in the Union Jack. Send the butt back and all this kind of stuff they used to say to me. I used to absolutely get terrorised. I went up to my club. The guy ran the club and I said to him, listen, I'm getting, you know, I was only young, 16, so I'm getting beaten up by these guys. Can you do something about it? They said to me, sorry, mate, I can't do anything about it. They all pay their money. You know, if we ban them, you know, they're good fans. They are. They give us good money. So basically, I felt really let down by my club. So years down the line now, I'm thinking, what are you going to do? What are football clubs doing to push the boat out rather than just ticking the boxes, doing the kick it out thing, putting out the T-shirts, having your little day of action and all this kind of stuff? What are you really going to do? And what was really interesting, Thomas Frank, the Brentford head coach, said, he stood up there and he said, I'll tell you something, I would rather take my team off if they were being racially abused. I'd rather do that than win promotion to the Premier League. And everyone in the room went, whoa. Mm. That's a really bold statement. So, you know, after that, I stood up and I said to him, tell you something, if I was 16 years old, when I come down to Brentford, if you said something that said to me, I would have thought, that manager's got my back. This team has got my back. You know what I'm saying? And these are the kind of signals and the kind of messages that need to be put out there.
No, well, hopefully there'll be a conclusion as to what happened on the weekend, and it will be dealt with in the correct way. Listen, Billy, cheers for coming on the pod, mate. Appreciate your time, mate.
No worries, mate.
Thank you, mate. Take care.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Let's finish up and bring it back to the governing bodies, because I think they're the ones ultimately that need to be held accountable and taking most of the heat in what's going on. Neil, do you think we'll see a black player this year walk off, or how far away do you feel we are from actually seeing a Sterling, a Pogba, or a Aubameyang, whoever? Are we close, or do you think this has just been a really uniquely bad 10 days and it will fade away in a few weeks?
I think on that, I think it's helpful that the season's coming to a conclusion. So I think that helps, because it'll give... I think it may well happen towards the start of next season if things are moving along. But I think it helps right now that the season is coming to a conclusion. Because
it'll give the governing bodies time to work
out.
No,
not that. No, absolutely not that. There's no way they're going to do that. It's more that it allows everyone to reset. One of the things that a season end does and then a new season starts is everyone resets. Everyone takes a breath. As humans, that's what we do. Mm. I just mean that basically there's... You know, Sterling's just come through and he's just had a run of 15 games where he might have chosen to walk off. He's only got 10 more games where that's possible for him, if you see what I mean. And just to go off the sheer law of averages, in terms of, you know, there's a thing that's come through all of these conversations, to be honest with you, which is that the people who you can call at the operation side of football clubs, i.e. the people who are involved with being on the pitch, being in dressing rooms, support coaching football teams, and that's what's come through the media as well, they're aware of the scale and the scope of the problem, and they're prepared to take some action to some degree to do something about it. You know, that's the second time we've had a conversation with someone who's referenced an internal thing, this time with the coach saying that there was other managers said it, you know, Pochettino mentioned it, Southgate, Klopp all said something on the lines of, yes, if there was collected racial abuse, I'd be prepared to take a team off. And
they need to do it, though.
But what I was about to say, though.
But I do think it's not... I feel like it's not a Pochettino or Klopp's place to say, I'm going to take my team off, if his players want to leave the field. I feel like, because it's... I hate to use the word victim, but it's the person being abused. Some people might want to stay out there and play.
No, but the point is...
But if you go to your manager or you go to your captain and say, I'm going to go, then they need to support you. But it's not for them to make that decision.
The point is, there's talk and there's doing it.
But
that's... Sorry, I'll let you finish your point. Sorry, no. Them being who? The player or the manager? Would you just unclear?
I feel like the person being abused should make the decision.
Okay, yeah, I can agree with you. I agree with that, yeah.
But my point is that then what happens is that, so you've got these people who lead these football clubs on the pitch, on the sidelines. Mm-hmm. We've got stewards who are all earning £10 an hour. What you actually heard there is that someone, you know, for instance, there's been complaints. What that means is someone's gone to the steward, and the steward, who is improperly trained, because we see that when we go to football matches at all levels, the stewards, you know, I've barely been to a ground this season where I'd have called the stewards fit for purpose. On any level, before we get into the complexities of racial politics and diffusing an awkward situation there and then the ground, they're not fit for purpose. they're not fit for purpose. And then that's the steward in, and then you go right the way through up the back ops of a footy club, and there'll be lots of people there who aren't fit for purpose and who haven't got an awareness of these issues, as has been said. And then you go all the way through these organisations that run football, they're not fit for purpose. The people in the back ops, they haven't got an understanding. Mm-hmm. So we're in a situation here where the people who are directly, who are the game, who play the game, who we watch and we admire, they understand it and they know what's going on. And everywhere else, not even just the governing bodies, but everywhere else, there are massive, significant shortcomings that no one's prepared to deal with.
So just a final question to all three of you. I've been racking my brain to try and work out... I'm not one of these people that believes that we were getting better at solving racism and, you know, this is a big surprise. I believe it was always there. It just wasn't as overt as in the 80s and the early 90s.
It wasn't as acceptable, was it?
And there's that as well. But I'm thinking to myself, what has made the overtness of the racism come back? And the only thing I can think of...
Social media.
Or... Brexit.
And Brexit.
Jinx.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Where people feel now emboldened to be able to go to a game and feel like, I can actually abuse you, Sterling, or Pogba. Or what. Can anybody think of any other reason as to why this season in particular, there's been so many high-profile, you know, situations of racism in football?
I did say social media.
Yeah.
I'm not on it, but then obviously being in 2019, you can't help but come across clips or whatever, or snap screenshots of things.
And explain how that links to actually happening in the ground.
Because you find that people think that they can say what they want anyhow because they've in the comfort of their living room on a keyboard, when really they are, I wanted to say it, a cat, but a different word for it.
You know.
In face to face, they wouldn't say anything.
But they are, but that's they the point.
No, but the point is that extra bravery that has come from getting desensitized to saying anything online, now when they're in a crowd, they're not face to face, they're 50,000 faces to face. So they've got the crowd and then they're going to say something in the crowd. So I feel like there's a bit of desensitization that has come from the social media element. Interestingly, on a slight topic to go back, I just saw pop up Sterling just saying that if players walk off, the racists have won. I couldn't disagree more.
I don't agree with that.
I couldn't disagree more. I think everybody loses if no football is played anymore. We sit down on this pitch and a ball isn't being kicked anymore.
But then I feel like he's coming from where I felt a few years ago is, yeah, I'm whatever job you do and you know there's people that don't like you because your colour or your gender. And, you know, I hate to say it, but put my big girl pants on and you know, put my makeup on.
And it's not working.
I know it's not good enough, but I'm... Yeah. Going to defend Sterling.
But yeah, I think, going back to your question, Jordan, the only thing I can think of apart from Brexit, you're right, actually, but I think the social media thing, I think it's wild. It's incredible. Yep. Some of the things that I've heard people do on there, because I'm not there. Anytime I come across, I'm so shocked. Mm. People say these things.
And the thing that's interesting, that you're not on it, I am on it, the three of us are on it. I'm not shocked anymore. I get lots of links sent to me, and I'm just like, so-and-so says...
You guys are desensitized,
either. Yeah, I think we are.
Yeah,
I think
and me, I'm like, what? People say this.
Yeah.
I saw something, I was at work last week, and someone showed me a comment about Rio Ferdinand.
Mm.
He was clapping in the studio, and someone said, oh, nice, you're happy because you can cheat without your wife, whatever.
Mm.
She passed from cancer.
Three young children...
I couldn't believe it.
It's getting out of hand.
No, do you know what it is? No one has fear anymore. When I was younger, there was consequences. If you were rude to someone in the street or you were violent to someone, there was consequences.
I agree.
It feels like there's no consequences anymore. Listen. And people then get emboldened and get bossy and get out of their damn right mind.
I agree.
Bossy.
Listen, guys, Neil, Tasha and Akin, cheers for coming on the pod this week, guys.
Don't forget, please.
We'll get back to football next week. You can find us on our iTunes, Spotify, Audio Boom, all socials, Facebook, Twitter and Instagram as well. Follow us on there. Until next week, peace.